Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Health Sciences conference call. And now Shackley's Chairman of Medical Affairs and Health Sciences, Dr. Jamie McManus.
Well, hello, Shackley family, and happy November and pre-Thanksgiving greetings to everyone. We're here tonight for our monthly call, and we decided to kind of focus on what many of you may have on your mind at this time of the year, and that is staying healthy during these coming months when we have cold weather and colds and flu that we're concerned about, even a little bit more this year, or certainly a lot more publicity about that this year, as well as just kind of dealing with what is also very common at this time of year, and that is stress. The holidays are stressful. The world is kind of a little bit stressful right now, I think, for a lot of people. And so we're gonna kind of just run through some kind of an array of topics that I think all kind of feed into staying healthy, the winter months, and the stresses that come with the holidays, the cold weather, and just I think a little bit of life at this point. So just a few introductory comments here, and then we'll get down to some interesting commentary and information for you on stress and eating healthy and all that. Winter time. I think that we are hearing an awful lot about the cold and flu season. This is every year. This is a topic for everyone. Upper respiratory infections and influenza are significant health issues for people in general, and in particular for high risk groups. And so I'm going to go through a little bit about how to differentiate having a cold or simple upper respiratory infection versus having influenza. I think most of you know how to, the appropriate self-treatment sort of things, but also just, maybe when is a good idea to seek medical attention, and then we can answer any questions that you may have about that at the end. And then a little bit about kind of the holidays and some overall comments about health issues related to that. So colds and flu, as a practicing physician and certainly here at Shackley, I have always answered these questions because there is an awful lot of overlap. Sometimes it's hard to tell, do I have a cold or do I have the flu? Overall, upper respiratory infections are milder by definition. They have a little bit slower onset. Usually your common variety of rhinovirus caused upper respiratory infection or the common cold, as it is known, usually starts with a scratchy throat, a little nasal congestion, and generally just progresses from there. Sometimes the sore throat may last 24 hours, but then it's pretty much gone. And then you progress with a little more congestion, a little bit of productive cough. Runs its course in 4 or 5 to 6 days in that range, no matter what you do. Symptomatic treatment, obviously, is available to help with the congestion, to help with the drainage, to help with the cough, but it is really symptom management. Colds are caused by a virus, so antibiotics are not necessary. Antibiotics do become necessary potentially when you have a complication that develops as a result of having an upper respiratory infection. Complications are a little more common in children, in young children in particular, with otitis media or ear infection being probably the most common complication, just happening from mechanical obstruction to the drainage of the ear from the nasal congestion. And so that they, your child has a cold and then spikes a fever, that's the time certainly to seek medical attention. Anytime you have a child who is just really not doing well, not taking fluids, high fever not responding to Tylenol or ibuprofen, whatever your doctor has recommended you to use, is certainly worth a phone call to your doctor and possibly being seen. For adults, complications can be ear infection. They can be a strep pharyngitis, although that's generally happens independently and not necessarily as a complication of a cold. And then a sinusitis or bronchitis, which are probably the more common, just kind of bacterial complication, although they can be viral in nature as well. And that's for your doctor to determine really as to whether you need antibiotics or not. But for most people, 80% of upper respiratory infections are going to resolve without the need for antibiotics. Flu or influenza, which this year essentially all people with flu have the H1N1 virus. This is a more rapidly progressing in its severity condition. Usually starts with fever and muscle aches, and oftentimes a dry cough, sometimes a painful dry cough. And so that's the differentiation, really. Upper respiratory infection or the cold is usually milder, usually more nasal congestion. You can have a little achiness as well, but it's not so severe. Whereas with influenza, you are pretty much down for the count for a couple of days oftentimes. And so, you really have a lot of serious aches, extreme fatigue, high fever, painful cough oftentimes. And certainly, also, the good news about flu is it is a virus. Your body does take care of the infection on its own for the most part. It also is a more serious condition than upper respiratory infection, and over 30,000 people do die every year of influenza, or as a result of influenza infections, usually from respiratory complications. And often in the high risk groups, the people of more concern with influenza who should talk to their doctor or notify their doctor as soon as they're ill, because there are antiviral therapies that can be used. Both Relenza and Tamiflu are available. And the high risk categories, just for everybody out there to know, you can read about this on cdc.gov and other sources. Your doctor may have given you handouts on the sorts of information, but just a little overview for everyone here. So if you have a child under the age of 2, or you're over age 65, or you're pregnant, or you have chronic conditions including diabetes, asthma, autoimmune or immunodeficiency conditions, significant heart disease, these are issues, heart or lung disease, these are situations where you are at higher risk for complications of influenza. So you may want to talk to your doctor, obviously, about immunizations and or antiviral treatment if you should come down with symptoms. The complications are a little more significant for this group. Okay, so those are kind of the overall, that's the differentiation of cold versus flu, and then obviously just use common sense and good communication with your medical doctors to determine whether you, your children, your parents, or anyone you're involved caring for should be seen relative to having an infection. We can answer any questions that people may have at the end about H1N1. So I think just a few other comments about staying healthy in the winter. A lot of people think that not dressing appropriately is going to make you more at risk. And actually, there is no evidence of that. It's a good idea for a lot of reasons, preventing frostbite and hypothermia and other reasons to dress warmly, but there actually is no evidence that if you don't dress appropriately that you're going to be more at risk. The reason for people getting sick oftentimes after they've, maybe gone out and had a physical adventure in the snow or skiing or whatever is just because they've overexerted themselves or not gotten enough rest or not eaten appropriately. All of those things can affect your immune system. And Les Wong is going to talk in just a few minutes about kind of all the things that are going on in your life right now that may be contributing to your stress level and the health consequences thereof. So we'll leave that here for a few minutes from now. Holidays also come along with travel, with the stress of the travel itself. We've had some comments and commentary and calls actually on that kind of topic in the past during the summer months. The same issues apply in the winter. It doesn't really matter when you're traveling, other than there's a higher incidence of someone around you being sick when you're traveling in December versus when you're traveling in July. And that's because we spend more time indoors and therefore we're in closer contact. And so the spread of viruses is easier, was the main reason why viruses are a little more prevalent in the winter months versus the summer months. And also viruses seem to proliferate better in cooler weather as well. Becomes a little bit more of a concern when you're traveling in the winter months, especially flights. If you're driving, it's obviously less of an issue. You're just to your own family or your own friends that you're traveling with. But the risk of travel along or flight flying travel, not only infections, but also the risk of blood clots. I can't say that often enough. It is a significant issue. There's actually a recent publication just a few months ago that showed a significant correlation of long flights of 5 hours or longer with a about a 10% increase in the likelihood of developing a blood clot. So it is a significant issue for people who are taking longer flights. Shorter flights is not so much of an issue. If it's 2 to 3 hours or shorter, in general, the risk of blood clots does not increase significantly. But we know that omega-3 fatty acids are a good way to help your blood be a little less sticky. So the platelets are less sticky so that you're less likely to develop a clot. And so that's a good thing to remember. If you are at high risk of developing clots, you may even want to talk to your doctor about using aspirin or some other anticoagulant to kind of thin the blood around the time of flight. And then hydration also is really important to not only just for overall health and overall immune function, but also to decrease your likelihood of having a clot with flying, because again, it is the thickness of your blood. It's not only the stickiness of the platelet, but if you get dehydrated, your blood is a little thicker just by definition, and so you may increase your risk a little bit with that. So those are some of the kind of overall things that you want to be thinking about in the course of the winter weather. I wanted to just share a couple of things about chicken soup, because you know, we're all about prevention around here, and so we, you know, there's always been the old wives' tale, maybe it's described as you know, chicken soup is good for the soul. There's a whole series of books about that now, but there actually is some reasonable research showing that chicken soup does help break up congestion, ease the flow of nasal secretions. It may inhibit the white blood cells that trigger the inflammatory response that can lead to kind of a sore, scratchy throat, and also can help decrease the production of the phlegm or the sputum that can obviously be some of the challenges related to having a cold. So just to let you know, there is some science behind the use of chicken soup, assuming that you like chicken soup, and then make sure you throw lots of vegetables in it, because all those vegetables that you throw in that chicken soup also have their own antioxidants and other health benefits related to onions and garlic and carrots and celery and all that. We could spend a a whole session talking about that. And then finally, my last comment about the holidays is that, you know, spending more time with your family, sometimes that's wonderful and sometimes that's highly stressful for people. And I fully understand that. I come from a family of six children. And so when we get together, it's a mild chaos at best, generally a good chaos. But when you have six siblings, there's always somebody who's a little annoyed with somebody else about something. And so, you know, it just kind of comes along with family by definition. And so we want to remember that the best way to deal with all those family stresses is to laugh about it. Because we know that laughter is good for the soul, improves immune function, decreases stress, improves blood flow. Laughter is great medicine. And with that, I'm going to smile as I pass the call on to your Vice President of Health Sciences, Les Wong, to talk about the effects of stress upon your health and hopefully some great tips to help deal with all those stresses that come along this time of year. So, Les, are you there?
I am here. Thank you, Dr. Jamie. And you talked a little bit about the different stressors or things that are creating stress in our lives these days. First, before I talk about the health consequences, because there are so many, I should give a little bit of physiological background of sort of what happens during stress and what is the stress response. Number one, it's a normal psychological and physical reaction to the demands of life. But if you're unable to cope well with the stress in your life, your mind and your body can pay a pretty steep price. Think about it. Your body is really hardwired by nature to react to stress in a way originally meant to protect you against perceived threats from predators and aggressors. But today's different demands may include managing a huge workload, managing two jobs, making ends meet, taking care of aging parents or young children, and simply making it through a morning rush hour that today, in the Bay Area at least, has what we think might be a faulty bridge that's causing lots of accidents and too many speeders. So, what happens in the natural stress response? Well, when you encounter these perceived threats, a dog barks at you, you're coming up to a bad section of the bridge, your hypothalamus, a tiny region at the base of your brain, sets off an alarm system in your body. Through a combination of nerve and hormonal signals, this system prompts your adrenal glands located at the top of your kidneys to release a surge of hormones, including adrenaline and cortisol. Now, adrenaline increases your heart rate, elevates your blood pressure, and boosts energy supplies. And, of course, this is kind of for the supporting the fight-or-flight response. Cortisol, which is kind of the primary stress response hormone, increases sugars or glucose in the bloodstream, enhances your brain's uptake and use, and increases availability of substances that can repair and protect tissues. Cortisol also curbs functions that would be non-essential or detrimental in a fight-or-flight situation. It alters immune responses and also suppresses the digestive system, the reproductive system, and growth processes. Well, that's all fine and dandy in a normal situation, but what happens when your natural stress response is always kicked in or sort of kicked off and gone haywire? Well, it's usually self-regulating. And so what happens is after the stress response, it decreases hormone levels, enables your body to return to normal once a perceived threat is over, it's done, it's passed. And as adrenaline and cortisol levels drop, your heart rate and blood pressure return to normal levels, and other systems sort of resume normalcy and regular activities. But when the stressors of your life are always present, leaving you constantly feeling stressed, tense, nervous, or on edge, then that fight-or-flight reaction sort of stays turned on. And the question is, what happens when this fight-or-flight response is constantly on, and is that a healthy thing? Well, we think not. That long-term activation of the stress response system and the subsequent overexposure to cortisol and other stress hormones can really disrupt a lot of body processes. Not only does this impact your feelings and your mood, but it also puts you at increased risk for numerous health problems. And so when we talk about feelings, there, you know about the feelings of insecurity or feelings of social withdrawal that you can get from stress. That's not really a health consequence, but certainly can have damaging consequences in your life. From a mood standpoint, there can be anger, there can be sadness, there can be irritability, there can be burnout, there can be all sorts of ramifications there. But what's been more interesting, I think, is the longer-term effects on true health impacts. And I think the newer research is showing that this is pretty significant. For example, we know that stress, constant stress, can have an impact on heart disease risk, including heart palpitations and high blood pressure. We know that immune function can be weakened and immune function can decrease with constant stress. We know there are sleep problems. We know that length of sleep and ease of going to sleep can be problematic. Whether or not this turns out to be a significant health consequence is not sure, but we think that there's something there. Digestive problems. There's headache, back pain, things of this nature. Depression, obesity, memory and cognitive impairment, and there actually is some evidence that there's worsening of skin conditions such as eczema. So, I mean, there are many more health consequences of stress that we hadn't thought about previously. We know the acute effects, the emotional effects, the mood effects, and the feeling, the effects on feelings, but now we're beginning to study the impact of physical and psychological stress on long-term health effects, and they're pretty significant. So what do we do about this, and how do we respond to this? Well, Pam's going to talk a lot about diet that can be used to support immune health, and also is going to address, I think, stress in it as well. But clearly a healthy diet, Dr. Jamie mentioned chicken soup, rich in fruits and vegetables, rich in antioxidants, plant food based, lean protein sources, whole grains, again, lots of fruits and vegetables is going to be very supportive of a stress management diet. Also exercise. Regular exercise is probably, in my opinion, probably the number one thing for me personally to help me reduce my very minimal amount of stress that I have in my life and my job. So there's relaxation techniques that you need to take care of. There's fostering healthy friendships that can be very beneficial. Again, getting plenty of sleep and rest. And there's also, you should be seeking professional counseling or psychotherapy if your stress is totally out of control and you feel you have no way of sort of, you know, getting, you know, both feet on the ground and taking care of it. Things which I personally haven't done but are recommended are things like meditation, yoga, and Tai Chi. For me, exercise is pretty good. Here's some other things that that are recommended to help reduce the stress load in one's life. A very simple one is just to relax. You know, very important to unwind. Everyone needs some downtime during the day, whether that's in the morning before everyone else is in the family has arisen, or at the end of the evening, but you know, after everyone else has gone to sleep. Everyone needs some individual downtime to just personally debrief and collect themselves and rid themselves of stress. So make time for yourself. Think of it as a part of our prescription for health. Don't feel guilty about it. Make time for yourself to do something for yourself, whether it's doing something you like, taking a walk, relaxing and decompressing, but do some things to pamper yourself a little bit, and that will help reduce the stress. Talk to your friends. Talk to your friends who can help you work your way through the stress. They feel these stresses as well. They sense it when you have it, and they can help you through it as well. Also, it can often be helpful to hear a different perspective, a different point of view that helps you, sometimes can give you tools to better address some of the issues, and it reminds you that you're not alone in this struggle, that there are many people in the same boat as you, and they're willing to support you and help you through it. Compromising. It's not always worth the stress to argue. Giving in once in a while, even I have found that this is a personally rewarding thing to do. Writing down your thoughts. Writing down what you think can make you feel better about it, can help clarify what the issues are, and sharing that with others can be a helpful thing as well. Helping others. Here's a very interesting one. Helping someone else can help you. If you help your neighbor, if you volunteer somewhere, if you help someone else through their situation, that can be very beneficial towards your own sort of, not only your personal growth, but can help to address personal stresses. And the last thing I will mention is to make sure that you try not to deal with stress in unhealthy ways. It's very easy for people to turn to things like alcohol, smoking, overeating, perhaps even drug use as a result, or as a result of stress, or they make stress can become an easy excuse to turn to some of these things. And rather than do that, try to do some of the healthy things that we've talked about already, and then that Pam, I think, is going to talk about more in terms of, you know, smart, sound dietary strategies to help you through the holiday season. And with that, that's my little part on stress. Now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, our colleague, Pam Manning.
Thanks a lot, Les. Hello, everybody. So, yeah, I'm going to focus a little bit more in detail on a healthy diet to deal with stress as well as to support a healthy immune function and immune system. And as Les mentioned, that's one of the things, your immune system can become impaired during times of stress. And I want to talk a little bit first about how stress kind of alters metabolism, because then that relates to why a healthy diet is so important. One of the parts of the stress response really is your body's way of having a steady supply of nutrients, especially glucose. And so the stress response is designed to alter metabolism to meet a steady supply of glucose. Increased levels of the stress hormone, such as growth hormone, cortisol, adrenaline, glucagon are all responsible for the changes in carbohydrate, protein, and fat metabolism, ultimately to free up glucose so that you can deal with the stress that you're under, whether it be physical or mental. So some of those changes in metabolism, for example, you know, the carbohydrate that's stored in your muscles and liver is broken down to produce glucose. Protein synthesis, the building of proteins is decreased, which can lead to, you know, decreased protein that's needed to make your immune cells. And fat is also broken down to kind of release fatty acids for additional energy. Now, all of these metabolic changes are kind of causing the body to shift from a anabolic state, a building state, to a breakdown state or a catabolic state. So the body's really not able to build tissue as well. It's dipping into its nutrient stores to supply energy. So in turn, stress really causes your body to use more energy and nutrients, and there's an increased rate of this nutrient turnover. And just to give you an example, you know, when there's an increase in carbohydrate metabolism due to stress, there's going to be a substantially increased need for your energy-producing, you know, B vitamins. One of the most essential B vitamins during stress can be B6 or pyridoxine, because it's involved in the synthesis and the breakdown of proteins. So with that increase in protein breakdown during stress, it's important to get enough and plenty of B vitamins, especially B6. Vitamins and minerals are also needed to increase or to help make the stress hormones. Vitamin C is found in high concentrations in the adrenal glands, and that's where your adrenaline is made. And we know that during stress, the concentration of vitamin C drops rapidly as adrenaline is produced. And there's also some research on the role of vitamin A during stress, and it appears to be protective against the negative effects of prolonged exposure to high levels of stress hormones like cortisol. So bottom line is, the better nourished you are during times of stress, the better you're going to be able to defend against the stress-related consequences that Les just talked about, and also it will help you support a strong immune system during these winter months. So, and Les mentioned briefly some dietary components. I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on nutrients to focus on. So let's talk protein, and we did a whole health science call on protein just recently. So you guys should, those of you who participated in that should be all experts on the health benefits associated with protein. So again, it's important to point out that adequate protein is really important to support a healthy immune system, because if you consider that, you know, most all the parts of the immune system require protein, your body organs, the skin, mucous membranes, enzymes, antibodies, and other immune cells. And without enough protein, there's going to be a decrease in a lot of immune cell production, such as antibodies and phagocytic activity. Now, the highest quality protein foods to focus on in your diet then are a variety of lean meats, fish, poultry, low-fat or non-fat dairy products, so your milk, yogurt, and cheese, and of course soy in the form of tofu, tempeh, and soy protein products. Another nutrient to focus on is actually healthy fats in your diet, and Dr. Jamie talked about omega-3 fatty acids and thinning the blood and that function, but also fats play an important role in your immune system because they're part of the membranes of immune cells, and they're precursors to prostaglandins, which are kind of hormone-like substances that regulate the body in a number of different ways. It can influence inflammation and platelet aggregation, like Dr. Jamie talked about, and vasodilation. So as the types and amounts of dietary fat change, so does the composition of your cell membranes and the response of those cells to immune stimulation. So certainly, you know, cutting back on saturated fat and trans fats and placing greater emphasis on poly and monounsaturated fats is a really good first step. And, you know, your polyunsaturated fats, your vegetable oils and things like that, are mostly omega-6 and or omega-3s from fish. And most of us get more omega-6 in our diets, and these types of fats actually have been shown to suppress immune system, our immune function a little bit, while the omega-3s, on the other hand, help support immune function. So it's really the balance of omega-6 to omega-3 in your diet that's important to focus on. And since most of us do get plenty of omega-6, the best thing to do is to boost your overall intake of omega-3s by consuming fatty fish as much as you can, as well as taking fish oil supplements. Now let's talk a little bit about vitamins and minerals. I mentioned vitamin A, and that's also known as retinol, and it's important for normal function of the immune system, our skin, the cells that line your airways, your digestive tract, and urinary tract are all function as a barrier and form the body's first line of defense against infection. So certainly you want to provide enough vitamin A in the form of retinol and its metabolites to maintain the integrity and function of all of these cells. There's also some research that vitamin A and its metabolically active form, retinoic acid, plays a central role in the development and differentiation of white blood cells, which play a critical role in your body's immune response. So typically, free retinol is not really generally found in foods, but a precursor form, retinol palmitate, is found in animal foods, so your meat, your eggs, and your dairy. And then, of course, plant sources would contain beta-carotene, which is a precursor to vitamin A and can be converted to vitamin A in the body. So your best plant sources are going to be your deep and yet orange vegetables, carrots, yams, sweet potatoes. And the good news is that as the holidays come around, those vegetables are pretty widely available and part of our holiday meals. So that's good news. And, of course, dark leafy greens, spinach, and kale. So certainly take advantage this winter of all those wonderful vitamin A-rich vegetables. The other vitamin is vitamin C. Of course, many of us try to take in more vitamin C during the winter months or when we're feeling a little under the weather. And what we do know is that it's needed for the production of collagen, which is a component of your skin cells, so that's going to help maintain that first line of defense against foreign invaders. It's also found in high concentrations in your white blood cells. And it's believed to protect your immune cells from damage because of its role as an antioxidant. And we do know that inadequate vitamin C status can impair immune function, increase your susceptibility to infection and illness. So really good sources of vitamin C in your diet are going to be obviously your citrus fruits, oranges, grapefruit, but strawberries, tomatoes, potato, sweet red peppers, and broccoli are also really good sources of vitamin C. So again, get those servings of your fruits and vegetables in your diet because you're going to really protect and support your immune system and help you deal with stress. Also, we've heard a lot from all of us in the past about vitamin D. I just want to remind folks that in addition to its role in bone health, it's really an important immune regulator. There's good research suggesting that populations who have high levels of vitamin D in their blood or have a less incidence of upper respiratory tract infection. But really good dietary sources of vitamin D are certainly far and few in between. And the winter months also make it more difficult to get adequate sun exposure to allow your body to make its own vitamin D. But in the meantime, do your best to boost your dietary intake by eating some, you know, fatty fish, mackerel, salmon, sardines, and don't forget to take your multivitamin with supplemental D. And then, of course, the B vitamins, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, B6, B12, folate, pantothenic acid, and biotin. Now, they're all act as coenzymes in the body. They facilitate metabolic reactions, and those B vitamins all work together to release energy from food. So during stress, when your body is breaking down more carbohydrate, proteins, and fats to provide that glucose, it's critically important to make sure that you're getting adequate amounts of B vitamins to support that increase in carbohydrate, protein, and fat metabolism. Some of the best sources of B vitamins are whole grain, breads and cereals, rice, pasta, beans, nuts, lean meat, seafood, and pork. So, you know, getting a wide variety of foods and whole grains especially is important. Just two more minerals to talk about would be the essential mineral zinc. It plays a, certainly a very important role in immune function. It's a structural component of many different enzymes and also serves as kind of a signal between immune cells. And we know that zinc deficiencies are associated with an increased incidence and severity of upper respiratory tract infections. Some of your best food sources include shellfish, lean beef, and other lean red meats. And nuts and legumes can also be a relatively good plant source of zinc. And then I can't forget to talk about selenium. We know that selenium deficiencies are also associated with impaired immune function. And although its role in immune function is complex, it may be that selenium's role as an antioxidant nutrient may be involved. So kind of like vitamin C, if the immune cells can be protected against free radical damage, they're less likely to be destroyed during an immune response, thus increasing their numbers and effectiveness. So some good food sources of selenium are organ meats like liver and seafood, shrimp and crab. In general, there's a wide variation in the selenium content of plants and grains, but if you look for enriched grains like brown rice, that can be a good source of selenium to support your immune system. So that's kind of the diet as it related to stress and immune function, but I also can't not focus on a little bit about stress and how that can affect your weight. And I've talked about this in the past, and I just want to remind people of a few tips to manage their weight during the holiday season, because few of us would argue that those weeks between Thanksgiving and New Year's, you know, are stressful, and many of us engage in stress-relating eating behaviors like eating on the run, skipping meals, binge eating. So it's now is the time to strengthen your coping skills and gain control over your eating behaviors that may be undesirable due to stress. So my first tip, again, is to start, you know, give yourself a little permission. Have some small portions of those special foods during the holidays that are important to you, but just, you know, small portions. You don't go overboard. Sometimes when we restrict ourselves too much, then we eat, you know, we overdo it. So giving yourself a little permission to have a small portions is okay. And just be sure that when you do that, to focus on getting back on track with the very next meal and overall eating a healthy diet. Plan ahead. One of the best things you can do to gain control over the holidays is to take the risk of spontaneous eating out of the picture. So before you step out the door to go to your next food-related holiday event, just picture yourself there. Picture yourself eating, you know, one plate of food, choosing from the healthiest options available, and just taking small portions of your favorites. Self-monitoring, keeping a food diary, that act of writing it down, what you eat, what you drink, will really keep you aware of what and how much you're eating during the holidays. So if you've never done it before, now is the time to kind of keep a little food journal. It really does help keep you just aware of your eating habits and help keep you on track. And that will, you know, prevent you from overindulging, hopefully, during the holidays. And, you know, don't forget about the most important meal of the day, breakfast. If you skip breakfast, you're just going to set yourself up for being too hungry later on in the day. And when you do that, that just leads to unhealthy food choices and unhealthy eating behaviors. So eating breakfast is really a great way to keep hunger in check and prevent you from binging on a holiday treat, you know, on holiday treats. So, you know, mix yourself up a cinch shake, get some good protein and fiber to start your day and help control your hunger. And lastly, remember to drink plenty of water. It'll help keep hunger at bay. You know, get a little fancy, have your sparkling water with a twist of lime, fancy cherry, whatever makes you happy there, because feeling festive and full while providing fluids are important for your skin, your digestive, and your vascular health, and it's going to help you deal with stress and everything else throughout the holidays. So that's pretty much my suggestions for this round. I'm going to hand it back to Dr. Jamie to wrap things up.
Great, Pam, thanks. And I always get hungry listening to you talk because you make food sound, well, food is good, but you do have such a lovely way of making it so important to get all those fruits and vegetables and whole grains and all the great sources of specific nutrients. And I think it's really helpful to know, you know, to get reminded as to why it is that we have to eat the, or we're going to be the healthiest if we eat a good variety of healthy foods. we talk a lot about fruits and vegetables, but it's really good to remind people about why nuts and grains and, certain types of proteins are all, great things to be taking in on a regular basis, because they all have those individual nutrients that are, so important. So thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And so, yes, as Pam has said, I'm going to summarize things here real quickly, and then we can open it up to questions, as I'm sure we will have a few questions on the line. So in order to stay healthy for these upcoming months, I think the most important thing that you can do, as both Pam and Les have talked about here, is to eat a healthy diet full of all the nutrients that help support immune function and help decrease inflammation in your body. You've heard and read about the anti-inflammatory diet. Well, it's really nothing special. It really is how we all should eat every single day. We know that saturated fats, high intakes of saturated fats, and in particular trans fats, and which means fried foods in particular, are things that you want to try to avoid, as well as to be eating all those sources of antioxidants and more naturally inflammation-fighting kind of nutrients, as Pam has just so nicely outlined. Healthy oils, low-fat proteins, minimal or very low glycemic type sugars and starches. You want to have things that are dark in color and bright and colorful or dark, nothing white in general. We should avoid white sugar, white flour, et cetera. And as Les pointed out, also to get plenty of sleep. We know that you're going to be best able to deal with stress, as well as have the most optimum functioning immune system that you can, when you get 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. That's well proven by all the sleep studies. Exercise, as Les talked about, and however you do that, add some activity into your life. That's really very important. Les likes to swim every day. I like to run or to walk with weights. Yoga's great. My daughter's really gotten me into yoga, and I think that's wonderful for stretching. We all tend to hold a lot of stress in our muscles. And so massage, yoga, meditation, relaxation in any way that you can are all important to try to release kind of the tension that we hold in our bodies from just life in general. You want to, during especially this time of year, really all year round, but in particular during the cold and flu season, to wash your hands frequently. There really is pretty good evidence that you don't need antibacterial soaps if they make you feel better. Fine, except that a lot of experts are really concerned about the development of resistant bacteria in relation to having, these kind of antibacterial agents that are so prevalent in the environment and so many people using them. But the most important thing is warm water, plain ordinary soap, wash your hands, your wrist, lather up for, a good minute is really nice. Use warm water. Hand sanitizers are an option for, especially if you can't wash or in between times, just to kind of decrease the bacterial content, especially if you've, shook hands with someone or touched the doorknob or whatever. It's not unreasonable, especially with this time of year, and especially if you're in a high-risk group. If you're in one of those high-risk groups we talked about where you're more at risk of developing complications from colds or flu, you do want to take a little extra caution. And supplementation, obviously we're here in Shackleyland and we believe and support the use of supplementation. It is important to follow that healthy diet. The reality is most people don't follow all those healthy eating habits or don't incorporate the full array of all the wide variety of types of foods so that you really have all the nutrients that your body needs. That's why there's so many studies out there that connect the use of even a multivitamin, just a multivitamin, with improvements in health and decrease in sick days in lots of different studies and lots of different age groups and categories of people in the studies being done. So age-appropriate use of multivitamins is absolutely a foundation. Vitamin D, Pam brought up vitamin D. We know that vitamin D is very important for immune function and very important probably for helping the body deal with stress, and that if you live north of the 37th parallel, which is a line for that approximately from L.A. to Atlanta, Georgia, so the great majority of people in America live north of that 37th parallel, you are at risk for having suboptimal to extreme deficient levels of vitamin D. So we now know know that the RDA is not necessarily what people need to be taking in supplementally, and that we also have our Shackley published study here in the Journal of Clinical Lipidology a few months ago that correlated the use of supplemental vitamin D in the range of 800 to 1,000 IU in order to get into an optimum level of vitamin D in the blood. Probiotics and prebiotics have also been shown to be helpful in supporting immune health. Digestive health is correlated with immune health, which is part of the reasons why the prebiotics and probiotics are associated with improved immune function. We've talked a lot about omega-3 fatty acids. I think it's important that we need to decrease the intake of omega-6s and increase the intake of omega-3s, or create the best balance of omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, which affects the inflammation tendencies in the body. We mentioned vitamin C a fair bit tonight, so certainly dietary sources as well as supplemental sources of vitamin C are definitely associated with better immune function, decrease tendency to have upper respiratory infections, and a little bit quicker recovery from upper respiratory infections. Once you've been exposed, the addition of herbal products, especially echinacea and elderberry, can be of assistance in helping the body kind of mount a little better immune response. So those are some of the most important things that you can be doing to maintain your health, to deal with stress. Just to remind everybody again that my final comment from the first part of the talk tonight and my final comment tonight will be to remember to laugh and smile and kind of let that stress out. It's kind of like with the massage therapy. Try to, you know, as opposed to watching the scary movies, maybe pick out a comedy. a nice comical love story, even better. Read cartoons, listen to jokes, you know, go on to the Daily Puppy .com website. That makes me smile every day just to watch those cute little puppies. I don't have a puppy at this point. That probably would increase stress, and maybe that, you know, so that's a great way to get the fix of having a puppy without necessarily having the fun of having to clean up after the mess of a puppy. Anyway, so on to the more serious topics here. We're going to open this up to Q&A now, so that if you could come back on, Jody, I believe it is tonight, that's helping us out, and give everyone instructions on how to line up for Q&A.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you do have a question, please press the number 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will hear an acknowledgment that you have been placed in queue. If your question has been answered and you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the number 1 again. All questions will be queued in the order that they are received. Once again, if there are any questions, please press the 1 on your touch-tone phone.
All right, thanks, Jody. And while we're waiting for the first question, let me remind everyone that we do archive these calls. These calls are archived for 1 month until the next health science call occurs. So you need to make sure that anybody in your organization, any friends or family that you feel can be helped by listening to our tips and discussion of tonight, you can send them to area code 512-404-1255 and press the number 2. Again, that number is area code 512-404-1255 and press the number 2. And that'll be up until our next health science call. Okay.